All right, Kevin Adams just wrapped up down at Harbor Center. We are just turning that sound around for you, making sure we got it all buttoned up for you, and I will replay that for you very shortly. But in the meantime, as before we do that, by the way, the big news that he said the Sabres are prepared to match an offer sheet for Bo Byram. I have thoughts on that. I think that could be posturing, by the way, to let any team know, hey, we're going to match it anyway, so just, you know, trade what we want to trade with you. But either way, we'll get all of that to you in just a moment. In the meantime, Daryl Ryder, our good buddy from The Fan out in Cleveland, joins me right now, 92.3 The Fan, our Odyssey sister station, on the West Her Hotline. Good morning. I know you've been doing the morning show over there, so I appreciate you doing this afterwards.
You betcha.
You got it, buddy. All right, so the reason I reached out initially, and I obviously want to talk about what's going on with the Browns, is you've been all over the Browns stadium situation. We've talked in the past about it, Daryl. It seems like it's finally there, right? They've crossed the finish line. Kind of give us an update on what happened yesterday and where things stand with building a brand new stadium for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns will be leaving the lakefront and building a $2.4 billion enclosed stadium in Brook Park. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed the budget the other day, and included in that budget was a $600 million grant for the project. They found a creative way to do it without using actual tax dollars. The state of Ohio has nearly $5 billion, that's with a B, dollars in unclaimed property funds going back decades. And so what they're doing is using what's called an escheatment law that allows the state of Ohio to basically claim the unclaimed property. And in this case, they're going to pull $1.7 billion out of that fund to use for statewide stadium projects. This isn't just the Cleveland Browns thing. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to get around $400 million for their stadium renovation. There's going to be $700 million left over when it's all said and done to assist, whether it's the Cincinnati Reds, the Columbus Blue Jackets, any other pro sports team in the state with renovation and stadium project dollars. And that fund will get replenished. And also, too, if folks in the state, because there's this narrative out there that people's money is being stolen, and that's not the case. The fund will be replenished over 16 years with $100 million each year. And oh, the neat little thing that the state did was, in case the Cleveland Browns overpromised but underdeliver with the dome as well as the adjoining mixed-use development that they're going to build for about $800 million, and that's privately financed. The state, if the tax dollars don't match the projections, the state gets to go into an escrow account that the Browns have to pay for and claw back the money to make the balance sheet work. So it has been a very hotly contested political issue. There still is not a lot of support locally, including from the county here for this project, even though it's staying in the county. But it's pretty much a done deal now that the Browns will be getting their new stadium in 2029.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit. So here in Buffalo, as you know, building a new stadium right across the street from Kern Highmark Stadium. And the way that was written in is any overruns on top of, I think, the $1.2 billion it was costing, any overruns the Pegulas are responsible for. And guess what? You build a stadium over a three-year period, there are a lot of overruns, especially considering the costs of materials, including steel, obviously.
The next thing that gets built on budget will be the first. Now, the Haslams are going to pay $1.3 billion toward the dome, plus the $800 million in mixed-use development. So that's $2.1 billion they are investing. That is the largest investment in the Cleveland area ever from, private, means. And so they are also going to pay the overruns for the dome as well. So it's not only that it's $2.1 billion, it's $2.1 billion plus the cost overruns, which, as you guys know up there in New York, could end up totaling in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So, this is a pretty significant investment by the Haslam Sports Group, the owners of the Cleveland Browns, and it's unfortunate that the narrative locally amongst the politicians has been that they're getting a free ride, that the Browns are just getting free money and this gifted this new stadium when, yes, there is public dollars involved, but also, too, the team is putting up the second most money of the 9 active stadium projects in the National Football League right now.
Tell us a little bit about Brook Park. I like where the stadium is located now. Obviously, it's kind of tradition and history right there on the waterfront. It's right near the baseball stadium, right near the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's a great space. A lot of great restaurants in that area. What's going to change? Where is Brook Park in relation to that for people who might not know the area intimately?
So if you've ever flown into Cleveland, that is where Brook Park is. It's right across the railroad tracks and highway from Cleveland Hopkins International Airport. And the site that they're going to build on, there used to be an old Ford plant there that has since been cleared away. There's still there's still a Ford plant there as well, still active today. But it is a sizable piece of land, 176 acres worth. And again, it's not just they're putting in a stadium surrounded by parking lots. They're also putting in this mixed-use development. They plan to put in some retail, hotels. There aren't a lot of hotels around Cleveland's airport. That's one of the regional criticisms folks that come to visit have, is there isn't enough around the airport. You have to go elsewhere. Well, this complex, and this is smartly done by the Haslams and the Browns, this complex will actually be able to help service the airport. Which, oh, by the way, Cleveland's getting a new airport, too. That's coming over the next 6 years or so. It's a $2 billion project. They're going to build a whole brand-new terminal and reconfigure everything and whatnot. So they're hoping to try and tie into that in some way, shape, or form. But you got 2 interstates and a couple of state routes around the thing, so the infrastructure's there. Unlike the lakefront, where there's one way in and one way out, this is going to have multiple paths to get in and out of it. And with a lot of Browns fans living in the suburbs, it should be a little more easily accessible than the lakefront. But, you know, obviously the Muni lot stories are legendary. More fun is had in the Muni lot than the actual stadium. That's the history of modern Browns football. So most of the good times when you think about the Cleveland Browns and their storied history, unfortunately, that's 30, 40, 50, 60, and 70 years ago.
Just another minute or two with Daryl Ryder here, the fan in Cleveland. Then we'll get to Kevin Adams' scrum. He just completed that down at Harbor Center during Sabres development camp. I'm looking at the renderings of this thing. It looks beautiful, but you would never know it's a football stadium. I said it kind of looks like a really modern, awesome-looking convention center with a football field. Am I being too critical or harsh when I say that?
No. So here's I've already nicknamed the place. I call it the Barn Dominium because that's what it looks like. It looks like a Barn Dominium. It's great. With a glass roof. So what they're doing, because the airport's right there, this is going to be built similar to SoFi, where they will dig 80 feet into the ground, and the seating bowl is going to be 80 feet into the ground, field level, and all that. So it's going to
that's
have
the way. By the way, that's the way Highmark is right now. Right now, Highmark is way into the ground, and the new stadium is going to come out of the ground, kind of like your stadium now is. Interesting.
Right. And so they did that for a couple of reasons. One, the airport. Two, cost. Less facade on it, which means less material you need, right? It'll all be in the other nickname I have for it, it's called the basement. In tribute to the fact it's going to be 80 feet in the ground, and also that's where the franchise has resided for the better part of the last 3 decades. So it goes hand in hand. But, it's actually the same folks that designed Minnesota Stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, they're the ones designing this one for the Browns. There's a lot of Cleveland architectural tributes paid. The glass roof pays tribute to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Cleveland Museum of Art, who have those big, massive glass atriums on them. It's going to still feel like it's an outdoor stadium, even though it's going to be indoor. But like I said, you're going to be field level 80 feet down to comply with the height requirements around an airport, and also it saves a few bucks. But yeah, I kind of like I'm going with the Brook Park Barn Dominium because that's what that place looks like to me. It's beautiful. Don't get me wrong, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
that's what it reminds me of. Because you're right, when you look at it, it doesn't look like a football stadium, right? It's going to be a really, really nice facility. Like I said, closest front row seat in the NFL, closest last row seat in the NFL. They're going to build a wall. If anyone is familiar with what the Los Angeles Clippers did in their new arena, with the floor to the ceiling, 35-degree incline of to create a wall of fans. That's going to be the new dog pound. And, oh, by the way, the visitors will be running out next to the dog pound. Their goal is to create a real hostile home field indoor advantage because, you know, they're the Browns and they need all the help they can get.
By the way, Minnesota, that glass roof looks amazing. It really does. It doesn't look like a football stadium. Then you go in, it's like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. What the Minnesota Vikings have built. Daryl, last thing for you here. We'll talk more football when we hook up, maybe in training camp. Hopefully we'll see each other and can talk. And of course the Bills play the Browns this year. But as we get there, who is the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns on opening day this year?
I got one of four names, and it could be any four of them at this point. But, you know, honestly, look, I think it's going to come down to Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett, honestly. I really don't think that they want to play the two rookies, Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. I kind of feel like because Gabriel was a third-rounder. And, look, Shedeur's here basically because they're just like, hey, he's there. Why not? Let's do it. What do we have to lose, right? If we strike gold, great. And if he washes out and isn't anything, whoop-de-doo. It was a fifth-round pick. Who cares? So I feel like it's going to be either Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett to start the season, but it would not surprise me if they pivot. If things start out slow, the Browns have one of the toughest schedules in the NFL, especially early in the season. The first 7 weeks are pretty much a gauntlet. It's brutal for them once they get through the Cincinnati Bengals. So I think it's a two-man race. They say it's a four-man race, but I would be shocked if one of these rookies started week one.
One of the best in the business. Always love catching up with you, brother. I know that you had an early morning. I'll let you go now, but I'm sure we're going to catch up again as the season gets closer. Daryl Ryder, you can follow him, by the way, on Twitter. I love his Twitter handle. It's Ryder Wrong FAN. By the way, R-U-I-T-E-R. Ryder Wrong FAN. 92.3 The Fan, Odyssey sister station in Cleveland. Thanks a lot, buddy. Have a great rest of your week and 4th of July.
My pleasure, Sal. Look forward to chatting with you again soon, my friend.
All right, you got it. That is Daryl Ryder. In the meantime, you've waited, we have it. Kevin Adams spoke with the media down at Harbor Center earlier this morning, just about 40 minutes ago, and maybe less than that, I guess. And it was a scrum, so we not at the podium while development camp is going on. And we're going to play it for you right now here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Kevin Adams with the Buffalo media contingent.
Can we start with Bo? Where are you at in that situation, and how's that coming along?
Yeah, it's a lot of conversations with his agent right now, and nothing's changed in the sense that, you know, we believe Bo's an excellent hockey player that can help our team win. You know, I've maintained same position that if there's a deal out there that makes sense for us that we think's going to improve our roster, we're open to it. But if there's not, you know, we're not in a situation where we're looking to move him out or looking to move him for futures and stuff like that. It's just for me, we want to help our team win hockey games, and he does that.
Are you prepared to match an offer sheet for both?
Absolutely, and that's why the position, you know, the moves we've made and the position we've put ourselves in from the cap perspective has been strategic. You know, we if you leave just enough room in your cap that where you maybe see a projection on a one-year deal, and then someone comes over the top, you're potentially putting your organization in a really tough spot. And so the moves we've made and decisions we've made for weeks now leading up to this point is with that in mind. And so, no, we'll be matching and have the opportunity to have a player under contract that think helps us win.
Kevin, you've gotten tougher, you've gotten bigger. Are you confident that there's enough offense on this team, especially with Paterka gone?
Yeah, it's a good question, John. I thought a lot about that, and, you know, as we set out our off-season kind of plan, we wanted to be harder to play against, we wanted to be better defensively, we wanted a bit more of a veteran presence. You know, of course you want talent, but I think we have a lot of talented players that can produce offensively. We need to be better defensively to put ourselves in a position to take that next step. The moves we've made, starting with the Paterka trade and right through yesterday, have been with that in mind. And yeah, like I want to have skilled players, but I want to have harder players, players that make, you know, that play on both sides of the puck, that compete, and that goes back to what I just laid out. So Yeah, I think we have the talent and skill to score goals, and we just needed to clean up some of the other areas.
Why Alex Lyon, and just what role do you envision for him? As a backup, do you want him to push the other guys?
Competition. He's a proven goaltender in this league. I think he's a really good veteran. He checks the box of what I, you know, just laid out in terms of veteran presence, like high character guy. He's proven in the league. He's played well in his time in the National Hockey League, and you know, he's going to challenge and push. And but no, we just think he helps us win hockey games.
What do you said? Want to find? I know one of the goals was to find top six help, especially with JGR. Is there a sense of frustration with trying to find that? Having it be a little bit more difficult to
know
about it?
Well, I think based on, you know, the decision we made on JJ, you're moving a talented top six forward out, but you're improving your teams in other ways. And, you know, by getting 6'5" mobile right shot defenseman, a guy that I've been chasing for a couple years now, was critical to cleaning up our decor and how we're going to play. And then getting Josh Doan, who you guys may not know quite as, you know, much. He's relatively young in the league still, but powerful, strong, plays both sides of the puck. We think he's just going to keep getting better and better. So, yeah, you're improving your team in a different way. And that was kind of, as we set out this offseason plan, I like skill, of course. You want that. But where we decided to focus our attention and spend the dollars in different ways was to be more competitive, harder player against, better defensively, and that was our goal, and that's why we made the decisions we've made.
What was the thought process on Bernard Docker?
Yeah, I think from our perspective, where his projected salary was going to come out, and where we had him slotted as potential, you know, in the eighth spot, call it, with the moves that we had made over the last few days before that. Just felt like that didn't make sense in terms of also with having Ryan Johnson and signing Jones, and Rathbone had a, you know, as a guy that we know could come up, and then that's not counting the younger guys that you never know exactly where they'll be, but that's why we, you know, made the decision.
Kevin, yesterday on TSN, Craig Button said, people want to leave Buffalo because they don't think they can win.
We have to earn it.
What's your reaction?
Yeah, we have to earn it. I mean, nothing. For me, nothing changes in the sense of how I've answered this question before. We have to win hockey games. I can stand up here and I can lay out our plan. I can tell you exactly why we've made the decisions we've made. I can tell you why I think we've done a good job in terms of putting ourselves in a strategic position when it comes to the Byram situation. But ultimately, we just have to win games starting in October. If we win hockey games, we earn the respect around the league. People won't say stuff like that.
Were you surprised that a lot, and I mean a lot, of the free agents were off the market before free agents even opened?
Yeah, I don't even know. I think that's one of those things that supply and demand a little bit maybe, and your team's focusing on your own players and, you know, weighing. There's a risk when you get to noon on free agency is the window opens and you start making the phone calls and getting on the phone like I was yesterday with agents and players, and you're explaining where you're at. There's a risk, you know, they have 32 teams to choose from potentially. So I think when teams identify your own situation and you look at the player that you're potentially retaining versus going external, teams make those decisions differently, but that's probably why you saw that.
And with Brian McLeod's new contract, what's kind of the projection for him? Will he take on more of an offensive responsibility?
Yeah, I think one of the things I love about Ryan is he showed last year, I mean, third, second line center, he can move over to wing, he can play power play, he kills penalties, he's an all situation player. As a right in the prime years of his career as a centerman, you know, when he was 2 years from UFA, so I felt that this is a really important piece with our team and the role he plays. And you're also, you know, we're buying 2 years of UFA years in the deal that he signed. So I think it was a, you know, win-win for both sides. And if I go back a year ago when we identified him, we made the decision because we thought he had upside. We thought this was a player that could help us now and grow into the future. Which is exactly why what he did this past year in terms of his play, and then fortunate to get him on the contract we did.
Have you done any talking with Alex yet, or has all his other stuff kind of pushed that?
Yeah, there's not. Yeah, it's a fair question in terms of the timing now. Obviously, there's not a pressure point like there is in other situations, but I did sit down with his agents yesterday or whatever the day was here recently, and just explained exactly how we feel about Alex, and that'll be ongoing, but there's not the pressure point of other decisions at this time.
Will you be doing the same thing with Kesselring too?
Yeah. You can do it if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, for us, as we look at the role he's going to play, that we'll sit down. We had initial conversations just to make sure we welcome to the organization, but haven't got there yet. But yeah, we're always open to that. We've done it with plenty of players over the years.
With Bernard Docker, you mentioned the salary point, and I guess it's $875. So I'm curious, like, was he wanting more than that?
Well, no, but what I'm talking about salaries is so people understand, you qualify a player to retain their rights, but then based on the rights that they have after a qualifying offer. If they have arbitration rights, they're slotted in based on comps in their class, and that number was significantly higher than that based on the market and the comps that go into it. So when I tell you that the number for where we had him, and I really like JBD, he's a good kid, he's a good player, but with our D-Core, the decisions that we've, or the decisions we've made and the changes that we've made, we kind of had him slotted in that spot, and that was, the number that you just said was a lot lower than what the arbitration award would have been.
Any concern, it's a right-handed defenseman, depth, that right D, you talked a lot about how those guys are hard to acquire, like, you got kind of an imbalance, I guess, now, a little bit, in terms of,
yeah.
I guess it depends where you put guys, but.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at our D-Core right now with Kesselring and Timmins, these are important guys in our top six, so I don't view it as an imbalance. And if you're slotting all the way down to 7 through 11 on your depth chart, you may have a little more lefties or a little more righties depending on the organization. But when it came to the players that I mentioned, the Ryan Johnsons and Jones and Rathbones, these are guys that we felt are solid players, and if we need to bring someone up because we had injuries or depth, we're going to be in a good spot.
Jones was a healthy. You said the other day, you like how things look right now on the blue line, but what if you do trade well? Who do you envision takes on a bigger role?
Well, I would just, it's a hypothetical, because if we traded in Bo, I feel like we're making our team better. So how are we doing that? Are we doing that through acquiring a defenseman or two defensemen or a forward and a D or just forward? So it's hard to say, but when I look at our group of six defensemen, I think we have an excellent group that can play different ways. I mean, you can play Byram and Dahlin together, and you could maybe have a different pair of bigger shutdown guys, or, you're just giving Lindy the options. Just depends on how he wants to do it. And in a hypothetical of if we traded Bo, then I just feel like as I opened this, the only reason we'd be doing it is we felt we made our team better. So I just think we'd be in a good position there.
Jones was in the NHL all last year, but he was a scratch 36 times. They were deep on defense, but what do you see for him here, and what can he do to get more time?
We just think he's a good hockey player, and didn't expect a guy like that to be on the market, in the way we were able to get him. So provides, he's just a talented player, so I think he could play different roles. And I think he's going to come in and push and have competition, which I think is a great thing.
He's a unique story. What role do you envision for him?
Well, he's the ultimate, when you do your homework on a guy like that, competitor, glue guy is the word, like a hockey term I'd say in terms of the locker room, but just versatile, can move around your lineup, play up and down, can move to the wing, center. So good penalty killer, just brings a veteran presence to our lineup that I think is really important. And when you kind of go through the off season and you categorize players and you put them in different tiers of, okay, these type of players are bring this, and these type of players are skill and they bring this, when we had the Danforth type of players, he was at the top of our list. So as soon as we had the opportunity to go try to recruit him and get him, we did that yesterday.
You've got to do these early moves and signings, but what still needs to be addressed in this line?
Well, we like where our group's at in terms of the way the roster sits today, but we'll always look to get better if there's something that makes sense. But I think from, we've done a good job in terms of reshaping the look of our D. I think that's something that was important. We've brought veteran guys in that are, going to help us defensively and hard to play against. We've brought in some character guys. So I think as it sits today, we like where our lineup is, but if there's areas anywhere forward to make a move that we think's good, we'll do it.
I think Danforth will be a center.
I think that's, up to Lindy, what we talked about with him on the phone yesterday, and just as a group, is we can slide, Krebs can slide to the wing, so we have options, but I think he's equally comfortable, but I think that's where it's important to have guys like, when you look at the middle, even Kozak, guys that can, they're centers, but they can slide to the wing, and I guess that's a Lindy question in terms of how he sees when training camp goes where the best fit is.
It is a very definite thing. Mason Gearson has a very particular set of skills. Is that something you felt was lacking, or is that something you felt this group, on the whole, needs to have something like that?
We needed it. I just think that, it's a unique skill set, and he brings it, and he's proven it, and Lindy coached him in New Jersey, so... that's helpful as well, just to know the type of guy you're getting to the organization. But he and I had a good chat yesterday, and he'll be ready to go.
There was a report that there's people in management who think the broadcast is too critical. I'm curious if you heard that, what your reaction might be to that.
There's a report that broadcast.
There was a change in producer on okay. the broadcast, and there was a report that there's people in management who think that the broadcast is too critical.
Like our own broadcast? No, I mean, I love Razor. I think he's funny, and Duffer does a great job. Marty Braun is maybe the most positive guy on the planet. So who do we got? Dan Dunleavy. He's awesome. Did I miss anyone? Those guys are great. I have no idea what you're talking about, but they're awesome.
Can I ask you a quick one on development camp?
Sure.
A few years ago, there was like tons of guys here that were eventually on your NHL roster. A lot of, minor league guys. Pretty light roster this year. I'm just curious why the philosophy change.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a philosophy change as much as a lot of the guys that were in Rochester. It's a taxing year. The goal at this camp is less about being on the ice. It's more about getting familiar with the organization and who's who and what does everybody do and what does it mean to be a Sabre. So a lot of the guys that, maybe in other years would have been here, like Hellenius, a perfect example. He's not new to the organization, not just because he's been here and he's been in Rochester. So that's part of it. And then I think sometimes, especially with Rochester's length of the season, you want to make sure they get the rest and then you get right into their training and, be disruptive in terms of some of the thoughts that if you're bringing guys over. But, so it's a smaller group this year, but, a lot of picks, obviously the picks this year and then last year, other than Consta. So I think it's not as much philosophical, just more probably the way it played out.
Is there some perhaps thought to, getting them some face-to-face time with Gallivan? I guess that's the one benefit that I
Yeah, oh, like a Hellenius or something? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's something we did talk about. But, they can do Zoom calls and get just – they're on programs, and Galley's already taking care of that. So it's not as critical. But, yeah, I think it is something we did talk about.
Okay, that is Kevin Adams, Buffalo Sabres general manager, down at Harbor Center. That's why you hear all everything going on in the background. And I know a lot of you are like, I can't believe not in the media room doing this. He's watching development camp, right? He's the GM. I get it. They could have done it a different time. That's fine. But we played it for you. You have it there, and now you can react to it. 803-0550 is the number to call. Anything that struck you there. Obviously, the Bo Byram situation, the Alex Tuck situation, and a couple other things that he touched on there we can talk about. And I'll hit on those when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you on a Wednesday where the Sabres continue to hold development camp. We also continue to wait on the Bo Byram situation to sort itself out. I'll let you know exactly what Kevin Adams said on that and have my thoughts as well as yours at 803-0550 here after this time out on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.